This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, October the 11th, 2013. Hello and a very warm welcome to this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. We'll be reading extracts for you, as usual, from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending October the 11th, 2013. Christine Aston and Fredina Hearn are our editors. I'm Ros Lydiard, your presenter for today, and this week your readers are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And Mary Mitchell.
Hello.
And Mary is reading in for Jerry Tuff, our regular reader. She is away on holiday this week, lucky girl. So let's tell you what's on in the region this week. Now, if you have an interest in local theatre, there are some interesting productions coming up over the next 2 or 3 weeks. And I will take the liberty of reminding you of the next Chesil production, because some of us here today are members and I'm in the cast. It's Transit of Venus, which opens tomorrow, Saturday, October the 12th. There are no performances on Sunday, and then running until Saturday the 19th of October, with a matinee at 2:30 p.m. on that day. Tickets can be booked on 07 527 471 539. I'll say that number again. 07 527 471 539, or via www.chesiltheatre.org.uk. Another local company, Rayots, in their Romsey Theatre, The Plaza, are performing a new adaptation of Jane Eyre for just two performances on Friday and Saturday, the 18th and 19th of October at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available on box office number 01794 512 987. 01794 512 987. Next, we can tell you that Robert Hardy, with his co-performer Neil Nisbet, is coming to Winchester Cathedral on the 19th of October to take the title role in The Dream of Gerontius. This is a new sacred melodrama for two actors, choir and percussion. That sounds fascinating, and I'd certainly go for that if I wasn't otherwise engaged. But the performance is at 8 o'clock, 8 p.m. that is. Tickets are priced from £12 to £40, the latter price including a pre-performance reception. And they're available from the Cathedral box office on 01962 857 275. And again, 01962 857 275. And from Thursday the 17th of October until Saturday the 19th of October, a weekend festival at Romsey Abbey will celebrate the life of Ethelfleda, the second abbess of the Benedictine convent, and the contribution that she and other women have made to the church. Ethelfleda is noted for standing naked in the River Test in the dead of night chanting psalms. She would have been arrested for that these days. The concluding item of the festival programme is the Ethelfleda concert, with music by Bach, Brahms and songs by Clara Schumann. Unreserved seating, more information if you want it, and tickets of £12 are available from the Romsey Tourist Information Centre, 01794 512 987, and that number again, 01794 512 987. Now, do you like going to the movies? The film Le Weekend, a comedy romance, if that suits your taste, will be showing at the Everyman in Winchester until the 17th of October. Well, that film features Jim Broadbent and Lindsay Duncan in the lead roles, and tickets can be booked on 0871 0871 906 9060. That number again, 0871 906 9060. What else have we got? Well, the Winchester Farmers Market is on Sunday, the 13th of October. Moving on now to lighting up time for the week ending Friday, the 11th of October, when the sun came up at 7:23 a.m., lighting up began at 6:22 p.m. And on Wednesday, the 16th of October, the sun will come up at 7:31 a.m. and lighting up at 6:11 p.m. If you have friends or you know of anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you received from us, please telephone Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. That's 01962 862 826. And, of course, you know that if you want to skip any particular item on this recording, you can just press the forward button on the top of your Sapphire player to move to another track. And now we go to our main headlines this week. And Claire has the first one for us, New City Council HQ, back on the agenda. Thank you, Claire.
Colebrook Street block could be demolished and Guildhall extended. Winchester civic chiefs are considering knocking down their offices and building a new HQ, the Hampshire Chronicle can reveal. City Council leader Keith Wood is due to make an official announcement on what could be a multi-million pound scheme at the next Cabinet meeting on October 23rd. The Council has refused to confirm details, but it is understood proposals include demolishing the 1960s block on Colebrook Street and extending the Grade 2 listed Guildhall. According to council sources, Guildhall Yard, a private car park for council staff, has been potentially earmarked for the new building. A new entrance to the offices would be on the Broadway, while the current site and council-owned Colebrook Street car park could be sold for housing. The latest proposals come 10 years after the idea of a new council HQ was first proposed. Originally, the council-owned car park in Middlebrook Street was a front runner before it was ditched in favour of Colebrook Street in 2006. In a statement, Councillor Wood said, "The city offices are now over 40 years old. They were built by Conda as a prefabricated building and are well past the end of their planned life. Building surveys show they need a significant amount spent on them to repair the roof, windows, and much of the structure of the building. Whether that is a viable option is under consideration." He added, "We are reviewing the council's accommodation needs and will use this information to decide the way ahead. However, nothing has been decided about how we will resolve this, and until we do, there is little we can say about what will happen to the site in future." Councillor Wood added, "Colebrook Street car park will be needed when the Silver Hill redevelopment starts and Friarsgate car park is demolished. It is not yet known when work will start on Silver Hill. The £130 million revamp of the area between the Broadway and Friarsgate. In recent years, the council has consolidated its offices, vacating bases in Friarsgate, Hyde, Abbey Mill and Chesil Street. Winchester architect Robert Adam said redeveloping the council offices was long overdue. He called for any new building to be traditional rather than contemporary to fit in with the grain of the city. Councillor Fiona Mather, Conservative, who sits on the city and county councils, said, "I'm not happy building on Colebrook Street car park, and I don't think the residents of Colebrook Street will be very happy either. The cathedral, the Guildhall, and city restaurants all need evening parking. It is such a useful car park for all sorts of people, as not everyone likes using multi-storey car parks, and it earns a lot of money at the moment. Liberal Democrat councillor Martin Todd, who also sits on both councils, said, "We need to make cost savings, but the Conservatives need a focus. If they're making a mess of the planning for River Park, how are they going to do a good job of planning new offices in the Guildhall?"
Domestic violence tops Chief's agenda. Commissioner shocked at scale of problem. Hampshire Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Hayes has pledged to give top priority to the scourge of domestic violence. He said he was not afraid of the challenge to ask the questions that no one had dared ask before in his bid to tackle it and its devastating consequences. Mr. Hayes admits he has been shocked at the true extent of how deep-rooted the problem runs throughout Hampshire, and believes his position will allow him to make the difference where others have failed before. He said he was determined to slash the increasing numbers of victims suffering, often in silence, at the hands of abusers and bullies, and end this centuries-old problem. He said he hoped to work with specialists in their fields to share their expertise and develop innovative solutions. It comes as figures reveal 28,944 domestic violence and abuse incidents were reported to Hampshire Police last year, the equivalent of 79 a day. It is also estimated that 130,000 children are living with high-risk domestic abuse across the country, and that 7% of women and 5% of men have experienced domestic abuse in the last year. Mr. Hayes said, "This is a problem that has been around for generations, and public bodies have tried to tackle it in the past. But now I am in the unique position where I can bring people together in a way that has not been possible before. There is a lot of great work that is already being done, but this gives us an opportunity to tackle it as one rather than a piecemeal approach. And I hope this is what will make the difference and bring about social change." Initial work in Southampton has already shown that 65% of cases that the police deal with go no further. But despite having the data to identify repeat victims and serial abusers, that information is not being used to trigger early intervention, something which Mr. Hayes is determined to change. Shortfalls in support for children, men, and those within same-sex relationships will also be targeted, while prevention is also a key focus, trying to get schools to recognise their role in educating children about relationships. He will also dare to raise difficult questions surrounding refugees and whether the current piecemeal approach could be improved by a joined-up service with fewer but larger centres that meet the needs of modern society. He added, "I'm not afraid of a challenge or to raise difficult questions. Unless you address a challenge, you don't get anywhere and things stay the same. The consequences of domestic violence and abuse spirals down the generations, and it will only increase unless there is an intervention to prevent it."
Fracking in county is years away. Fracking in Hampshire is at least 5 years away, according to a planning expert. Planning consultant Richard Bate told a packed meeting in Winchester on Tuesday the controversial gas extraction technique would be held up by the planning process. Fracking involves blasting shale rock with water to access natural gas and oil. But there are concerns for the environment, particularly polluting the surrounding areas with chemicals and radioactive material found deep underground. Licences for exploratory drilling have already been granted in some parts of Hampshire, including near Winchester, between Stockbridge and Kingsworthy. Speaking at a meeting of around 150 people at the United Church, Mr. Bates said there are three rounds of planning permission. First, to explore an area, then, if gas or oil is found, an appraisal of how much there is, and finally, to produce it. It will take quite a while for these applications to come in, and I would think fracking is something like 5 years away. The meeting, organised by environmental groups Winchester Friends of the Earth and Winchester Action on Climate Change, also heard from Dr. Jörg Matter from the University of Southampton, a fracking expert, who said the process came with many risks. He said up to 4 million gallons of water are injected per well, and 10 to 15% comes back as a chemical cocktail that needs to be treated. There are a lot of open questions, and we have to improve our technology. We have to use less hazardous fracking fluid. We have to reduce hazardous gas and water coming back, and we have to reduce leakage of the hazardous water into surface water resources. According to Dr. Matter, surveys in the north have found more than 1 trillion cubic feet of shale gas, enough to power 15 million homes for 1 year, but no studies have been carried out in the south yet. Barry Slipper of Hythe, who used to work in the oil industry and attended the meeting, said, "We cannot afford to emit any more carbon emissions. The time for fossil fuels is up, and we have very few years left to end it. It's just crazy going after extreme sources like shale. That age is gone, and we really must have to move on."
Thank you all, and those are the headline stories for this week. We're going to continue now with the death notices, and then Claire will read Christian comment after that. And starting with the death notices. Briggs, Pat Briggs, nay Noyce, who was former head of home economics at Scholing Girls' School and then Itchen Grammar School College. She died peacefully at home on the 1st of October.
Fleming, Dr. James Jimmy Fleming, 29th of September, aged 97.
Ford, Beatrice Mary Trixie Ford, nay Cousins, peacefully on the 30th of September, aged 90.
Keats, Yvonne Hilda Jean Keats, in hospital on the 3rd of October, aged 88.
Kimber, Violet May Kimber, very peacefully, 27th of September, aged 80.
Kingshot, Arthur Donald Edward Kingshot, suddenly, 30th of September, aged 85.
Kirby, Wallace Harry Kirby, 29th of September, aged 95.
Norris, William Charles Bill Norris, peacefully on the 2nd of October, aged 90.
Oldham, Philip William, known as Phil Oldham, he was Falconer of Brambridge, peacefully in hospital on the 27th of September.
Wild, Paul Wild, after a long illness, on the 27th of September, aged 74.
Thank you. And Claire now, please, will give us Christian comment. Thank you, Claire.
This is entitled More Than Just a Harvest of Souls. For those of us on this side of the pond, the big shutdown in America appears like an exercise in political bullying and economic self-destruction. The cause of the argument seems unbelievable to those used to a health service free for all at the point of delivery. It hinges on a government subsidy to a small minority who can't afford health insurance, and a requirement that businesses with more than 50 employees provide insurance for their own. Having some sort of universal cover for health seems to us like the mark of a civilized society, and it throws a sharp cultural difference into light. Despite our party political differences, the debate in our own government has always been about balancing social and individual responsibility fairly. All sides of the debate want to regulate this balance rather than leave it up to the market. The United States is a much more religious nation than our own, but their churches have not always offered much grip against individualism and consumerism. Here in the UK, we can look back proudly to the contribution that churches have made to the state of welfare. In Winchester alone, they have been responsible for founding three institutions for the needs of the homeless, with the Salvation Army adding a fourth strand of provision. The UK Church has never lost its commitment to health in its various dimensions. It holds on to a concern for mind, body, and spirit, alongside a passion for the restoration of creation. In this story, individuals matter, but so do the wider bodies to which they belong. The Church's mission includes both local and global transformation. Harvest Festival time is a good opportunity to see this bigger picture bearing fruit in practice. The produce offered at Thanksgiving services throughout the city is passed on to the Night Shelter and Basics Bank. Rather than making a token gesture, we work together to make a difference in society. Compassionate involvement in the lives of others means more than leaving food at the altar. It's unsurprising that the Winchester Fair Trade Network has its AGM at Harvest. By encouraging a just price for simple commodities like tea, chocolate, and coffee, we can ensure a living wage to the farmers who produce them. And in doing so, we also demonstrate our belief that everyone, whatever their nationality, is entitled to a basic level of care, however that is achieved politically.
Thank you, Claire. We have six letters to the editor today. Mary has the first, and I think you may find that the popular theme of the leisure centre features yet again in our letters. But Mary, if you'd just give us the first one, please.
Yes, first one on a different topic. Health and safety, a soft target. This is a letter from Matthew Lee of Woodfield Drive in Winchester. I have attended the annual Winchester Roundtable bonfire and fireworks display nearly every year since I moved to Winchester almost 14 years ago. Since then, I have always donated generously to the organisers so that they can continue to run the event and support so many charities. Over the years, its popularity is such that I fully understand why numbers must be controlled and that a reasonable way of achieving this is the introduction of a modest charge. What I object to is that John Leeson, Roundtable Chairman 2013, cites the reason for the charge as being ever-increasing health and safety regulations. As a health and safety professional, I strongly object to it being blamed yet again for something that is not about health and safety. There have been no significant changes in the regulations for more than 10 years that would affect this event. If it is ever-increasing requirements placed on the organisers by either the local authority in their licensing requirements or the event's insurers, then please say so.
A letter from John Snyder of Hyde Abbey Road in Winchester has the title "Put It at Bar End Where It Should Be." I live in Hyde and use the leisure centre with my two young daughters. We also use and love the park, which seems to us big enough to serve the community and, if anything, is underused. To destroy the heart of the park would be completely inappropriate and leave a huge development surrounded by a couple of fields once it had been completed. The beautiful river park would be no more. The turning of this green heart into an urban sprawl and yet more tarmac, causing thousands more cars to zoom up and down Hyde Abbey Road and Gordon Road, would be a disaster for local residents, who already tolerate the excessive traffic the leisure centre generates. If the region seeks a mega leisure centre, put it at Bar End, where everyone knows it should go, with its existing facilities and easy access from the M3. Politicians pushing this agenda should beware the impact support for such a misguided project will have on their credibility. Why didn't the council spend £100,000 on the revamp of the existing centre, rather than wasting it on reports about the feasibility of a scheme no one really wants? John Snyder, Hyde Abbey Road, Winchester.
Hyde's very own Twyford Down? That's the heading for this letter. The City Council is proposing to destroy irrecoverably, I beg your pardon on that, one of the loveliest breathing, strolling and playing spaces in Winchester, and in any city in England. The presence of this giant sports superstore will spoil the atmosphere of the remaining fields, and probably of the nature reserve too. This could be Hyde's Twyford Down. The playing fields are not in the flood zone, but only because they can absorb masses of water. Where will it go when they are concreted over? The enlarged car park will suck in ever more vehicles and pollution. And what about the new centre's energy consumption and emissions? Winchester is already a sports hub, a free outdoor sports hub. James Hall, Arthur Road, Hyde, Winchester.
I think perhaps the next letter should come with a health warning because I'm going to be mentioning dog excrement. Why leave poo bags on fence, it's headed. Sir, on Sunday we took our grandchildren to Farley Mount to enjoy the play area. Entering via the gated area into the woods, we were confronted with plastic bags of dog feces hanging on the fence, plus a huge pile on the ground. Surely, if owners are prepared to collect the feces, they can dispose of them in a responsible manner. The County Council is looking for sponsors to fund installation of a bin and its emptying. I suggest dog owners contribute to this so everyone can enjoy the area. And the letter comes from Mrs. Lynn Brace of Cleese Way in Compton Down.
This next letter is from Paul Cooper of Cheriton Road, Winchester, with the title, Was Alternative There All Along? We have been quiet since the County Council's decision to pass the plans for Westgate Primary School on June the 6th. You will recall the rather shameful process the decision-makers went through on the day. See letters, particularly from Robert Hutchison on June the 13th. To ignore the powerful arguments on safety, stroke, transport, ranged against the development. Now it absolutely beggars belief that the County Council has demonstrated its complete lack of joined-up thinking when an alternative was available all the time. I refer to the revelation in the Hampshire Chronicle, October the 3rd, that the Adult Education Centre, a former infant school in Stony Lane, Wick, is being vacated and represents a much better solution to the problem. And according to Councillor Porter, this would have been a cheaper option too. You just have to wonder what Councillor Perry, now of course leader of Hampshire County Council, and his team were thinking. Were they being willful in ignoring this alternative, having become obsessed with the all-through educational experiment? It seems hard to believe that no one was aware of plans to close this facility. If so, then there must be a question of competence over our accountable representatives. Paul Cooper, Cheriton Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Dr. Shirley Firth has written about children who should always come first. The article, Sent Miles for Treatment, in the Chronicle October the 3rd, is a welcome exposure of serious deficiencies in changes in mental health treatment for children and adolescents. There is reference to Lee House no longer being available, but why? On the one hand, children are routinely waiting 6 months for counselling. On the other, treatment targets are being met. What are these targets and how are they being met? Since the formation of Sussex Partnership NHS Foundation Trust, qualified professionals have been made redundant. One very experienced consultant was so concerned at treatment of her patients being cut short that she offered to work without pay to see them through and was refused. Her post has not been filled by someone with equal qualifications and experience. It is encouraging that councillors are questioning the cuts and changes, and Councillor Lyon points out that we need to think whether we have the budget and structure required. 6 months is a long time to wait for treatment in a child's life, especially when they are seriously troubled. Our concerns should be to reinstate and improve provision with properly qualified and experienced professionals for children in Hampshire, so that long waits and long journeys are no longer necessary. Children should come first. And that's from Dr. Shirley Firth of Oliver's Battery Crescent, Winchester.
Thank you, everyone. And those are the letters from the editor to the editor. Now, do you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle? Well, you can contact them on 01962 860 836, 01962 860 836, or you can email them at news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could write to the editor at number 5, Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And we move on now to items from the files of Hampshire Chronicle, and I have the one that starts 200 years ago. This is October the 11th, 1813. Surprising result as duel called off. A duel had nearly been fought a few days since at Margate between two gentlemen who are both attached to an opera figurante. But a friend, interposing, they agreed that the lady's choice should determine the difference. The friend waited upon the inconstant beauty, when on having acquainted her with his errand, she, with the utmost sang-froid, replied, "They may cut each other's throats as soon as they please, for I do not care one pin for either of them." And my second item is also at Margate. At a library the other night, a young lady dropped her gold chain from her neck without perceiving it. Another lady near her, who saw it, let her handkerchief fall as if by accident, and then picked up the chain with it without saying a word. The ladies remained until the raffling was over. A young man, who had seen the transaction, approached the two ladies, took them respectfully by the hand, and with a smile said to the lady who had got the chain, "Come, madam, the joke has been carried far enough. Give up the chain and don't make the lady any longer uneasy." The chain was immediately restored, but not without confusion.
100 years ago, October the 11th, 1913. Guilty of using indecent language. Winchester City Bench. Mrs. Bassett was summoned for using indecent language and pleaded guilty. Police Sergeant Kerslake stated that at 11:20 on Saturday night, he heard defendant use the language from a window in Middlebrook Street. Defendant told the bench she was excited and repeated language that had previously been used towards her. Fined 1 shilling, and 6 shillings costs. The attention the Bermondsey Borough Council have been drawn to, the appalling and continuous slaughter of children in the borough by motor omnibuses, it has decided to ask the local government board to issue an order restricting the speed of motor vehicles to 8 miles an hour through the main thoroughfares. The streets are narrow and winding, with several abrupt turnings. In 12 months, 9 persons have been killed and 73 injured by motor traffic.
50 years ago, October the 12th, 1963. Nightmare of City Parking. Hampshire Notebook. Visitors to Winchester, lured to the ancient capital by its tourist musts, all too often find this very attraction a detraction. Built when cities were lived in and not bisected by never-ending lanes of traffic, it presents the visiting motorist with a nightmare of directions and prohibitions before he can find a place in which to park. It is not infrequent for drivers from the rural district to spend more time seeking a parking space than on the actual journey into the city. To the local resident, this problem is even more acute. Shopping time is almost governed by one's success in finding a haven for the car. And the second item from 50 years ago is a letter to the editor. Sir, the ungallant and doleful letter which appeared under this heading in your issue of October the 5th cannot be allowed to go unchallenged. The writer's disparagement of the intelligence of dear old ladies is quite uncalled for and must be based on limited experience. One has only to cross the channel with some of one's compatriots to know that the vast majority of dear old ladies, and a slightly smaller majority of less endearing old men, if they do any shopping at all, become perfectly well acquainted with a decimal system of coinage in about 24 hours.
25 years ago, the 7th of October, 1988, controversial film withdrawn. The directors of Winchester's cinema have withdrawn Martin Scorsese's controversial film The Last Temptation of Christ, which was due to be screened next week. The decision was taken by Mr. Wilf Partington on the advice of a non-executive director, Mr. David Cowan, who is chief executive of Winchester City Council. He had received several letters from members of the public since the film's release in London, urging him not to show it in Winchester. Winchester City Council has had no say in the affairs of the cinema since its lease with the Coral Leisure Group expired in July and the building was sold, so this week's decision not to show The Last Temptation was not in any way influenced by the council.
Thanks, everyone. Some really entertaining items there as you go further back in time. Right, our next item is again from Claire, and this is the popular comment section on the of the Chronicle.
This is headed Your Say. We asked, is our society becoming too protective of children, and are we allowing them enough freedom? Ellen Atkinson, who's 22, a postgrad student of Sutton Park Road, Sutton Scotney, said, it was much more relaxed when I was growing up. There are so many procedures and checks now, which is good in some ways, but not in others. Henry Garforth, who's 69 and retired, of Halls Farm Close, Hairstock, said, as a kid I could roam around because you knew everyone in the neighbourhood. Now there are all sorts of people around and it's too risky, so it curtails their freedom. Joanna Tilley, who's 23, a legal secretary of Bishopstoke, said, protection is great when needed, but I think we overdo things like sun cream and medicine. You're supposed to eat dirt when you're a kid to boost your own immune system. And lastly, Jason Kirby, who's 43, unemployed of Walpole Road, Stanmore, said, "There is a lot more exposure of organised crime around children, and it's important to be aware of that. But by mollycoddling them, we do them no favours in terms of learning skills."
Thank you. And the next item I'm going to read is editorial comment, and this is headed "Getting the Balance Right." It is perhaps a sign of the times that stranger danger is taught to children in reception classes. A police officer visits the school and warns 4- and 5-year-olds not to talk to strangers, and if ever they get lost, to ask for directions from someone in a uniform, for example a shop assistant. The hope is this will help to keep them safe. But what does a stranger look like exactly? This was the problem encountered by the head of Western Church of England Primary School, who sent out letters and emails to worried mums and dads about a suspicious-looking man in an orange hoodie who had been seen near the school. When the police were called in to investigate, it turned out to be a false alarm, as the man was actually a parent of one of the pupils. Was it an overreaction? Would the response have been different if he'd been wearing a suit? Clearly this will be a talking point for parents at the school gate. Of course it is right to warn children about potential dangers, but statistics show children are far more likely to be harmed by adults they know than complete strangers. Meanwhile, a perfectly innocent stranger may be too scared to help a lost child. I'm sorry, the next item is... I nearly forgot to introduce this one. The next item is first person, and Robin, can you give us that, please?
Yes, and first person this week is by George Hayter, with the title, "It's Not Just the Historic Bits We Need to Save." What is the most depressing place in Winchester? The city's grimy bus station gets my nomination. This embarrassing eyesore is falling apart. If its dilapidation wasn't a tragedy, it would be a comedy. Every one of the letters over the entrance proclaiming Winchester Bus Station appears to have fallen off. A more grim place to arrive in a town is really rather hard to imagine. Winchester City Council and developers want to knock down the Art Deco-ish bus station and build a new one. The well-intentioned scheme is just part of the £135 million Silver Hill redevelopment of 6 acres of the city centre. Only wrangling over a compulsory purchase order is holding back the wrecker's ball. What worries me, though, is the historical continuity that will disappear with the bus station. Winchester will be less like Winchester without it. I have often paced up and down in its dank and miserable confines waiting for a bus, but I have still developed an affection for the wretched place. Other towns have new bus stations, but they're invariably as soul-destroying as the bus station they replace. Like the Brooks Shopping Centre a few yards from Winchester Bus Station, these town centre developments fail to connect with their surrounding streets. They're too big and look as though they've been plonked there. A big part of poor Reading's town centre is like that, all new and soulless. I would like to see our bus station refurbished and given an exciting overarching glass roof to keep out the wind and rain. Combine and adapt, I say. Don't destroy. Architects may be waking up to this idea of maintaining more of our urban fabric. The winner of this year's Stirling Prize for Best Architecture is not a new building, but a renovation and conversion of 12th century Apsley Castle. Stephen Hodder, RIBA president, said the winning design was significant because the architects have designed an incredibly powerful contemporary house which is expertly and intricately intertwined with 800 years of history. Instead of knocking down the pieces of Winchester they don't like, architects should try a bit of intertwining with history here too. The bus station may not be as old as the medieval manor house that won the Stirling, but it has been a familiar part of Winchester for three generations. One of the runners-up wasn't a new building either, but a jazzy renovation of a dilapidated 1960s block of flats. So architects may be waking up to the idea that even buildings a few years old should not automatically be knocked down when an urban space needs revitalising. Comprehensive redevelopment is beginning to look like an old-fashioned idea. The new awareness, if that's what it is, has probably come too late to rescue our neglected bus station. But let's make sure no other part of the city gets junked in the same unimaginative way.
There's a new section in Hampshire Chronicle this week, and it's entitled Talking Point. Unsurprisingly, the subject of this week is about, yes, it's the leisure centre again. But it is clearly a matter of great concern and interest to everyone. The article is contributed by Councillor Keith Wood, who's leader of Winchester City Council, and he attempts to sum up the situation as it stands at the moment. And Mary, will you read that for us, please?
Deciding on the district's future leisure needs is a complex issue, argues Councillor Keith Wood. Users of the River Park Leisure Centre have been saying for many years that something needs to be done about it. In consequence, the council has been consulting, investigating and discussing for over a year now and needs to come to a decision. It was unfortunate that the latest public consultation was dominated by individuals with a single point of view. Others who also attended the meeting have told us that they felt anyone with a contrary view, including a large number of sports people, were either shouted down or cowed into silence. In consequence, the council's actual proposals were effectively ignored. So what is the actual position? Put simply, the council needs to decide whether to renovate the existing leisure centre, build a new one, or do nothing. The existing building has been assessed by consultant engineers who estimate that it needs immediate repairs costing around £4 million. To do a makeover would require about £7 million and loss of income of about £2 million while the centre is closed. Even that level of spending carries risks. The centre is over 40 years old, suffered a major fire in the 1990s, the full impact of which is unknown. We do know the pool is leaking in several places, as well as the roof. So there would need to be a large contingency sum set aside to meet the don't-knows and future maintenance. The main question is therefore whether it makes sense to spend this sort of council taxpayers' money on a deteriorating building without any real improvements to the district's sports facilities. If we build new, it provides the opportunity of giving Winchester the high-quality facilities Winchester needs and deserves. Cabinet put forward a suggested configuration that included a 25-metre pool with 10 lanes and an adjustable floor level, a 20-by-10-metre learner pool, new sports hall, gym, squash courts with movable walls to enable use for other purposes, dance studios, children's play area, cafe, etc. In addition, we're planning with the Pinder Trust to provide a hydrotherapy pool for children and others with chronic mobility problems, which could also be used by others with minor orthopaedic needs, a valuable asset for our increasingly elderly population. We have no professional cost estimate to build all this, but we are advised that it should be possible for around £14 to £17 million. Much thought has been given to building a regional centre with a 50-metre Olympic-sized pool and other facilities for elite sports people. No firm view has been taken on this, but there seems little enthusiasm for it within the council on the basis of increased cost, say £4 million, and a view that we should provide facilities for local people who will, after all, pay the bill. However, the whole process is part of a wider review of the facilities available across the whole district. But where to build? There are realistically only two possible locations, Bar End or River Park. Both present considerable problems. At Bar End, we do not own enough land and would need to find an alternative location for the playing fields, which are heavily used. It would mean city residents would have difficulty walking, cycling there, and greater car facilities would be needed. Following the meeting, Tesco's PR people have now contacted us and a meeting is scheduled, so the availability of land will be clarified. Were River Park used, the facility would be built on the existing tennis courts. If the configuration outlined above was built, it would mean that only about a 10 to 15 metre wide strip alongside the courts might be needed from the cricket pitch, not the whole area, as has been suggested. The tennis courts would be replaced on the site of the old facility when demolished. Traffic access would not be easy, but more would cycle or walk to the centre. No firm decisions have been taken on anything yet. The first stage will be in November, when council will be asked to decide whether to refurbish or rebuild or do nothing. If the decision is to refurbish, then we will work on this. If it is to rebuild, then we will make a case for each location. This is a classic councillor's decision, which will please some and upset others. Oh, the joy of being a councillor.
Thank you, Mary. Well, Durgarham has got some items this week, and I'm going to read a couple of them for you. The first one is entitled Great, Great, Great Gran is Relegated to the Garage. The mystery behind a package which contained a painting of an ugly woman has been solved, at least partially. Keith Webb of Quarry Road, Winchester, received the parcel from an unknown source last Wednesday, sparking widespread media attention. Now members of his family were able to identify it as Mr. Webb's great-great-great-grandmother, although he still doesn't know who sent it. Mr. Webb, 82, said, "It used to hang in my late uncle's house until it was passed to my brother, who then had it at his home in Bewley. It was recognised by my cousin's wife and their daughters." Mr. Webb's cousin Don and his wife Alison recall their daughters, Gillian and Jenny, sleeping in the same room as the painting at Mr. Webb's late uncle's house. "They remember how the eyes used to follow them round the room, like the Mona Lisa," said Mr. Webb. "My wife Sue won't have it in the house at all. It's currently facing the wall in the garage. We believe she was on the Bickford side of the family," he said. "Whether she was a Bickford or married into it, I don't know. I've got to go to the record office and see what we can trace. The family is coming at Christmas, so we'll decide what we want to do with it. It's unfair to sell it if one of the younger generation decides they want it." Mr. Webb spoke of his surprise at the level of interest in his story, which has featured in both national and international news. The painting is 200 to 300 years old and has been valued at around £200. Mr. Webb is pictured with this article holding a rather handsome gilt frame with the portrait inside, and I have to tell you I probably wouldn't have it in my house either. It's an understatement to say that the lady has character. I would worry about her casting spells on my home. And the picture actually in the background has Mrs. Webb with her hand up, very determinedly keeping the picture out. The next item is Councillor Keith Wood again, but in a slightly different light this time. "When an apology isn't enough," it says. "The role of council leader is a challenging one, fraught with thorny issues, bear traps and long hours. So one must assume it was the stress of a jam-packed schedule that resulted in a disgruntled female resident being addressed by Keith Wood as Mr. The confusion, or assumption, appears to have followed on from a resident signing off an email about the River Park Leisure Centre as Dr. Belgarham understands Councillor Wood soon apologised, but the unhappy Wintonian declared the damage was done. "He gets my gender wrong and insults my intelligence. Is this what happens when you write to those who are supposed to represent you? And those are the regular features chosen for you this week. And we're going to move on next to the news of general item news. So, on we go with the general news items, and Claire's going to start it off. Thank you.
This one is headed Charities Reap Rich Reward from Festival. Two charities have benefited to the tune of £10,000 from the Alsford Music Festival. Alsford Youth Association and Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, JDRF, have each received a cheque for £5,000. Co-organiser Tim Miller said, "The festival has great support from the business community and from music fans, and we are already looking forward to next year's event and raising even more money for charity." Mayor of Winchester, Ernie Jeffs, and Tim Considine from festival sponsor Salad Seminars presented a £5,000 cheque to the JDRF, and Matt Clark from sponsor First Option Software and Lisa Griffiths, chairman of the New Alsford Town Council, were on hand to present a £5,000 cheque to John Hickey, chairman of the AYA. Councillor Jeffs, who represents the Alsford ward, paid tribute to the festival. "Started by residents and backed by local businesses and entrepreneurs, it shows just what can be achieved by people pooling their talents to make something exceptional happen." A delighted Mr. Hickey added, "When a local event, supported by local businesses, can donate a lot of money for a local charity, it's the perfect example of how like-minded, determined people can make good things happen." The 2014 event is due to be held on June the 7th at Albury Park.
Pay and pension row set to close county's schools. Teachers' unions organise walkout. Schools across Winchester will be closed as members of the two biggest trade unions are set to strike in a row over pay and pensions. The head teacher at Perrins School in Alsford has already warned parents it will be partially closed, and a very slight danger it could be fully closed on Thursday, October the 17th. It is not yet clear how many other schools will be hit by the walkout, organised by the National Union of Teachers, NUT, and NASUWT. The strikers are angry about changes to pensions, increased workload, and government plans to bring in performance-related pay. The one-day strike is part of a continuing campaign of strikes by the two biggest teaching unions. Meanwhile, the government has said it will disrupt learning, inconvenience parents, and damage the reputation of teachers. In a letter to parents, Janice Bernard, head teacher of Perrins School, said, "We have looked very carefully at what is possible on this day, and we have taken the hard decision that for the majority of students, including Year 11, the school will be closed. We will be open for Year 7 and Year 8 students, but this provision is really only for the very small number of parents who are unable to make alternative arrangements on this day." Mrs. Bernard said students would be supervised on site and should bring their own activities as there would be no teaching. "We hope our plans mean that we will be able to operate in this way, but there is a slight danger that a decision to close the school fully may have to be taken at the very last minute." Councillor Peter Edgar, who is responsible for education at the County Council, said, "Any decisions to close schools will be for individual head teachers and their governing bodies to make. They will have to decide whether they have sufficient staff to enable them to open the school safely and maintain a full or revised curriculum, and it may not be possible to gauge the impact of the strike until the actual day. Heads have been advised to inform staff that if they do strike, they will not be paid for that day in accordance with nationally set legislation. As ever, the council's primary concern is for the education and welfare of children.
Council launches local laureate search. Hampshire County Council has launched its search for the Hampshire Poet for 2014. The winner will receive 4 paid commissions to celebrate projects and activities during the year, including work linked to the First World War centenary. As well as being a talented poet, the winner must be a confident speaker and advocate for the pleasures of reading and writing. The competition, launched on National Poetry Day last Thursday, is open to those living, working or studying in Hampshire County Council governed areas aged 18 or over. Entrants must send 2 poems from their portfolio plus a short statement of what they can bring to and gain from the experience. This competition continues the Council's successful local laureate scheme that began in 2008 and now runs every other year. The last post holder was Winchester poet Brian Evans-Jones, who has produced verse that has been published online, on postcards and on bookmarks. He's held workshops in venues including schools, prisons and libraries and encouraged people of all ages to write their own poetry. His flagship project was the Writing Hampshire website, which maps the county through poetry. Brian is one of the judges for this year's competition and is joined by local published poet Stephen Boyce and literature officer Angela Hicken. To enter, you need to go to the Hampshire County Council website. The address given is www.hants.gov.uk/Hampshire-poet-2014, and the closing date is December the 9th.
New battle lines to be drawn on plans. A meeting to hear about 83 homes scheme. Kingsworthy residents could be set for a new planning battle 20 years after fighting off a major development. Durley-based firm Drew Smith Group hosted a consultation in Kingsworthy last night, Thursday, on plans for a potential 83-home scheme in Topfield off Hookpit Farm Lane. The firm is already building 25 affordable homes on the site after receiving planning permission in November last year, despite 30 objections from residents. It is understood the homes now under construction are included in the 83 proposed, with 60% of the total houses designated affordable. The new scheme comes 20 years after residents fought off a plan for 300 homes at nearby Woodham's Farm off Springvale Road. Developers Laying Homes took the proposals to a public inquiry, but it was rejected as inappropriate development for the countryside. But the first part of Winchester's new local plan, passed in March, requires Kingsworthy to take 250 more homes to comply with the district's need to build more housing. Local reaction is still mixed, with residents keen to find out more information. Councillor Jane Rutter, ward member for Kingsworthy, said, "I'm sure there will be people who are horrified with these plans. On the basis of the local plan and in terms of what we have done and what is needed, I don't think it can be justified. But we are at a very early stage and we have to see what the plans are first." Councillor Rutter added she had been working with the parish council to identify sites for around 200 homes still required. She said, "This is just one proposal out of several that the parish council and city council will be looking at and consulting with residents. Drew Smith have their own ideas on what they want to see off Hookpit Farm Lane, and I think we should look at the proposals and then consult on what is right for the community as a whole. Nobody from Drew Smith was available to comment at the time of going to press. The consultation takes place at Tubbs Hall in Fraser Road from 7:45 p.m. Anyone unable to attend should contact Drew Smith's agent via mail at quaysidearchitects.com.
Play packs a punch for festival bid. For most performers, the Edinburgh Fringe Festival is something of a mecca. And University of Winchester drama students Mark Flynn, 23, and Marco Carraro, 20, are no exception. Their new play is not your usual theatre fodder, and so Mark, 23, was already thinking outside the box when he started thinking about finance. Smackdown Syndrome is a wrestling-based play which will be performed at the Discovery Centre on November the 20th, and he hopes proceeds from the performance will help them take their show to Edinburgh next year. To go to Edinburgh to perform would be amazing, he said. I wanted to raise some money to pay for the production costs of the play I've written, so I thought crowdfunding would be the perfect way of doing it. The support I've had from people wanting to get involved by pledging some money towards the hire of the venue and the cost of props has been incredible, said Mr. Flynn. Crowdfunding allows anyone seeking funding to raise cash through relatively small contributions from a relatively large number of people. The method has become so popular, it is even covered in one of the university's theatre degrees. Chris Buckingham, lecturer in the Department of Performing Arts at Winchester, said, "Without it, funding, a play wouldn't actually make it onto the stage. Mark has demonstrated the value of crowdfunding brilliantly, and I wish him and his crew the very best when they come to perform next month." And the article is illustrated by a photograph of Mark Carraro flexing his muscles as the wrestler and Mark Flynn, the coach, in their production of Smashdown Syndrome.
And another theatrical item, theatre gears up for centenary celebrations. A history exhibition chronicling the life of the Theatre Royal has been launched. In the lead-up to its centenary next year, Theatre Royal director Mark Curtis and chair of the board Mary Dawson gathered with staff and patrons for champagne and cake. And there's a picture of them round the rather large and very lovely-looking cake with Theatre Royal Winchester on it. Mr. Curtis said, "Over the past 100 years, the Theatre Royal has worked its way into the fabric of city life. We run youth theatre groups across the city, including the bigger estates like Stanmore. This is not an exclusive activity, it's for everyone." The event also saw the launch of a fundraising raffle with Roger Walker of Roger Walker Travel in Twyford donating an all-inclusive ski holiday as the main prize. The raffle will be drawn on the centenary day, Sunday, the August the 24th, next year.
Care service in virtual office move. Another care provider is expanding into the Winchester area. Prime Care Community Services has opened a virtual office in Southgate Street and is looking to recruit. The East Sussex-based firm was founded in 2001 and moved into Hampshire around 2 years ago in the Horndean area to provide adult social care. Mike Allerstone, sales and recruitment manager, said he wants to raise the company profile and build up client and carer numbers in the Winchester and East Hampshire area. He said he had had several requests to provide care in Winchester by social services that he had reluctantly to decline. Mr. Allerstone said to them, in the medium term, the plan was to open a full branch in Winchester. He added, "We are now widening our services to include the Winchester area for us to deliver our award-winning care to the community. Contact 01962 828 799 to find out more. The company currently has 7 branches and employs 300 carers. Staff attend specialist training in a wide range of medical topics, as well as personal care, companionship, assisted breaks, practical support, medication visits, home from hospital, rapid response, dementia, palliative, and end of life.
Record profits for housing developer. Barton Farm developer Carla Holmes has posted record profits on houses sold in the year to June 2013, despite booking a 5% dip in revenues. Pre-tax profits for the year to June the 30th were up 37% on the previous year to £12.5 million, though revenues dropped to £240.8 million against £253.7 million. Profits are set to be boosted in future years after the company won planning permission to build 2,000 homes on farmland off Andover Road. Construction is due to start next year. Carla sold a total of 694 private homes during the financial year, up from 666, and at an average sale price of £335,000. In total, it completed 850 homes, down from 875, largely on a reduction of affordable home completions to 156, compared with 209 the previous year. Alan Brown, chief executive of Carla Group, said the new investment is allowing the group to develop its land bank at a faster rate, and is confident Carla will double in size by 2017. He said, Carla has delivered another excellent performance during 2013 with a record profit for Carla Homes, improved gross margins and significant further progress in developing the length and quality of our land bank. To top it off, all this was achieved while going through a complex acquisition process which resulted in Carla securing the support of 2 blue-chip financial backers that will enable us to realise our growth ambitions. This investment has already begun to bear fruit, and we are now able to develop land within our existing land bank at a faster rate while simultaneously seeking to acquire additional plots in high-growth areas.
And this is a sad story. Families plea over double suicides, call to change mental health procedures. A Winchester family has urged mental health services to make changes after 2 brothers killed themselves just months apart, an inquest heard. Johnny Watson, 28, was found hanged in November 2012, 8 months after elder brother Matthew died in the same circumstances. Johnny had a history of mental illness since 2002 when he was diagnosed with schizophrenia. He'd been sectioned twice, including a 6-week stay at Melbury Lodge in August 2011. The inquest heard his health had been improving until March 2012, when Matthew hanged himself after relationship problems. Johnny was found at home in Somers Close, Stanmore, by younger brother James and mother Karen, who said he was prone to angry episodes and questioned his external care by the mental health team at Connaught House in Winchester. She said he didn't recognise he was ill and we couldn't cope at home, but when we talked to the service, we were told they couldn't do anything because Johnny had to ask for help. If it takes the death of my son to bring about a change in the way the services are run, then so be it. He was a lovely, lovely boy, and we had some beautiful times together. Dr. Shazad Khan of Connaught House said Johnny generally refused to take medication and attend appointments and would not discuss his mental health when he did see health workers. He said all the meetings were characterised by his reluctance to divulge his thought process. He would become irritable if an attempt was made to discuss his symptoms, so we tried to establish a rapport with him by focusing on more practical issues like benefits and supported housing. Dr. Khan added Johnny had been improving at the end of his stay at Melbury Lodge and was taking medication, so a more serious section was not considered. Coroner Sarah Whitby recorded a verdict of suicide. Matthew's inquest was held in August 2012, where his family described him as loved by all his friends and family and urged people to talk about their problems.
Residents agree on new home's location. Colton Common has become the first area in the Winchester district to agree the location of hundreds of new homes. The parish council has backed three places for building 250 houses over the next two decades. The three sites are on Main Road, near the Black Horse pub, the former Sandy Fields nursery, and Clayfields Park Homes, both also on Main Road. The sites were proposed after a public consultation by the Community Engagement Group, CEG, which got feedback from residents over the summer. It will be the village's contribution towards the 12,500 houses that must be built across the Winchester district over the next 20 years. Debbie Harding, a member of CEG, told the parish council that it had achieved its aim of making sure everyone had the chance to voice their opinion. Chairman of the parish council, Richard Izzard, said, "People have still got up until November the 19th to give their comments. We considered the sites as part of the process, and the site we have put forward is what we think is the best for the village. An informal drop-in session was held at the end of last month at the community centre, and the feedback will be fed into Winchester City Council's local plan, which will determine where the houses will go in Colden Common."
Views sought on city car parking. Winchester City Chiefs are consulting the public on a potentially radical overhaul of parking. Residents' organisations and businesses are being asked for their views on a new parking strategy for the district. A six-week consultation has now been launched by the City Council. For 20 years, civic policy has been to limit cars in the city centre. That policy looks to be under threat, with an idea to double the size of the River Park car park to 300 cars as part of the suggested rebuilding of the leisure centre. Steve Tilbury, corporate director, said the council was looking at where car parks were sited and where they were needed. The future of the Cattle Market and Gladstone Street car parks are being reviewed as part of a revamp of the railway station area. Mr. Tilbury said last month, "We want parking that serves the appropriate use in the right places. The cattle market is not much used by shoppers, but quite well by people who work at Denplan. We feel it is not punching its weight. You come down Andover Road, there's an opportunity there." The council wants to hear a wide range of opinions before reaching its decision on a strategy at the end of the year. Councillor Jan Warwick, portfolio holder for the Neighbourhoods and Environment, said, "Car parking is important to many of us, and often a topic of great debate. I look forward to hearing a wide range of views."
Care home closures linked to higher mortality rates. Campaigners fear the closure of council-run care homes for the elderly in Hampshire could be costing lives. Homes were shut at Cornerways in Kingsworthy and in Gosport and Fleet in 2012 and Andover in 2011. The County Council has confirmed 32 of 77 elderly residents have since died, a mortality rate of 42% compared to a usual death rate in care homes of 18% across the UK. The grim statistics were uncovered by campaigners fighting to save four residential homes threatened with the axe, Nightingale Lodge in Romsey and in Lyndhurst, Basingstoke and Petersfield. If the council goes ahead with the plans, 121 long-term residents, some with dementia, would have to move and 193 jobs would be shed. Tory council chiefs have said it would cost more than £10 million to modernise the homes and have put forward plans to turn three into extra care housing schemes of individual flats with support services run by housing associations. In a statement, the local authority said it was unable to conclude being moved was to blame. However, Councillor Tony Hook, deputy leader of the UKIP group, said, "There's absolutely no doubt in my mind there's a correlation between moving these elderly people and their premature death." Relatives and public service union Unison warned the trauma of moving could put lives at risk when Cornerways closed last year. Figures obtained under the Freedom of Information Act show six of the 16 residents left at Cornerways died. One passed away after the start of a 12-week public consultation on the proposed closure, and five died within an average 4 months after leaving the home. Tim Cutter, branch secretary for Unison Hampshire, said the statistics are in line with what we've heard nationally. A higher percentage of vulnerable elderly people die within the first year of care homes closing. The council said residents were not moved until suitable alternative accommodation was found. Some families have told the council their elderly relatives were happier in their new care homes. Councillor Anna McNair-Scott, executive member for Adult Services, said figures of this kind can give no indication of underlying medication conditions that would have affected the outcomes for individuals. And she added, "The comfort, security and well-being of those in our care is our main priority, and we take our responsibilities to preserve these very seriously."
New apprentices welcomed. 19 new apprentices have been welcomed by Winchester City Council, providing more young people with the chance to start their careers. Over the past 2 years, the council has taken on 13 apprentices, helping the council to boost its staff resources in spite of a budget squeeze. More than half the 13 have secured permanent posts at the council. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, portfolio holder for finance and organisational development, said, "I'm a great supporter of our apprenticeship scheme. It gives young people a first step on the career ladder and a valuable qualification. I am delighted that more than half of our apprentices are staying with us in permanent jobs. We are now aiming to build on that success with an expanded scheme. We hope our experience will encourage other organisations and small to medium-sized businesses within the district to recruit and train young people, and that our new grant scheme helps apprentices who are struggling to meet those initial costs of entering the working world. The new apprentices will work in a variety of teams, including business support, communications, housing and human resources. They will complete work-based training, giving them valuable experience and a nationally recognised qualification. Winchester has worked with several training providers, including Sparsholt, Eastleigh and Highbury Colleges, Locomotivation and QA. And there's a picture of all the new apprentices at Winchester City Council.
Thank you, Claire, and thank you, everyone. That concludes the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. And now a reminder, again, that Lynn Parker is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number is 01962 862 826. And again, thanks to our editors, Christine and Fredina. Also to the hard-working copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. Thank you also to our readers for today, from Claire.
Bye.
Robin.
Goodbye.
And Mary.
Goodbye.
Come and see us again, Mary. And from me, Roz. Goodbye. Thank you. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible, putting the address label inside the wallet. Have a very good week and thank you for listening.